Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good,
Dean
Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, and streaming live on Ustream. This is AfterBuzz TV for American Horror Story. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest American Horror Story news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, picking up where the show leaves off, and the buzz continues, it's AfterBuzz TV for American Horror Story.
Hello, hello, and welcome to AfterBuzz for American Horror Story. Season 1, Episode 4, Halloween Part 1, aired last night, Wednesday, October 26th. I am your host, Billy Nellis. I am joined by DJ Jesse Janity in the booth.
What a host.
Our regular co-host, David Scafaletti, couldn't be here with us tonight. Hopefully, we're going to get him on the phone sometime within the hour. In the meantime, you're stuck with Jesse and I. So, this week, Halloween at the Murder House, as the title suggests. Big things going down. We see some new faces. We see some old haunts. And we even see a tragic death, which we'll get into in a second. But first, I want to get into those new faces that we were introduced to this week. Chad and Patrick, the elusive gay couple who we've heard about for the past 3 weeks, the previous owners of the house, the only owners who Vivian and Ben were told about when they first moved in that tragic murder-suicide. So we see Chad and Patrick in 2010, and Jesse, what did you think when we actually found out this week that it really wasn't a murder-suicide like we've all been led to believe?
I mean, I really don't know, because I was just kind of taken aback by the whole chemistry that they had.
Right.
And I'm also very confused as far as the black latex guy. So I really wasn't expecting anything. I also, you know, and as far as, because it was the tour that was going around saying that it was talking about the death of them. Correct?
No, it was Marcy, the realtor, was who we got our information from about them. The tour was only talking about Dr. Montgomery. But the realtor was how we learned that it was a murder-suicide. So she obviously either was misinformed or...
Well, part of me also feels, and let me hear what you think about this.
Uh-huh.
I kind of feel like she has something to do with it.
Yeah, I'm on the same path as you. We have never talked about it in the past couple of weeks. But I really think that Marcy is a part of the house more than just the realtor who's stuck with it.
And I want to say something, but I'll hold it because of our movie of the thing. But I'm assuming that's why you picked it, because I don't, maybe not, but I'll get into it later.
Okay.
What I think with them, Chad and Patrick.
But so yeah, we saw Chad and Patrick in their alive state before their deaths, and they're in this marital strife, sort of the same relationship drama that seems to be a pattern with couples who move into this house. It seems, every sort of relationship romantically between the sort of adult couple falls apart in some aspects, as we've seen every flashback that we've gotten. So we saw them, you know, there was infidelity. All these things that Ben and Vivian have been dealing with were reflected in Chad and Patrick as well, who I think were played expertly Zachary Quinto was amazing this week.
Yeah.
In the role of Chad. I thought that he was perfect casting when he, in that initial scene when he went through that, he had that sort of monologue where he just went nuts and then went right back to wanting to decorate the pumpkins. I thought that was just like spot on perfect what we could have hoped for in that role. So I feel like he's definitely, he's obviously the Vivian of their couple, and Patrick was definitely the Ben. So I liked the, so to see that in another couple and see the reflection of that. When we see them come back, I suppose, as ghosts, as fluffers, as Marcy has said that she wants someone to come in and sort of fluff the house, make it prettier, make it better than it's been so that they can sell it. Obviously, Chad and Patrick. Now, what do you think? Is that where your suspicions on how she's aware of the ghosts because she recommended the young gay man and that's who came?
Yes. When she made the comment as far as, I know this older woman, but she costs more.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of felt, all right, you're trying to lead them away from her.
Right.
And then I just feel as if, and then it is also Halloween and she's trying to make them spruce up the house. Everything is always about protecting the house.
Right.
And we even heard it again, a quote in here, you don't even care about the house. He said that to Vivian.
Right. He said you don't deserve it.
Right.
Even as far as to say that. So yeah, that sort of led me to believe that she's aware of them. But then I was confused because when Vivian came upon them in the yard, they seemed, at least Patrick seemed like he wasn't aware of that reasoning for them being there. And it seemed like it was an opportunity for them to go in, but it wasn't why they were there. So I feel like we're being sort of played with as to which way we should understand them. But as they all are sort of manifestations of the house, which is what I'm coming to believe these people are, I do think maybe they weren't aware of why the house brought them there until Vivian told them, sort of thing. They just all of a sudden were able to be present. Which I think is interesting and something to get into in predictions as to.
Almost like you think about, like kind of with Vampire Diaries, how we're going through, you think about them and that manifests it in that sense of it, so they were almost summoned.
Right, exactly. Like the house summoned them because they were necessary to do what the house needed at this point. Yeah, that's definitely the vibe I'm getting. So we see them sort of go through, they're trying to help Vivian.
Well, so my
and Ben.
Question for you then.
Yeah.
Is, and obviously we don't really know, but the guy in the black suit, he murdered Chad
them.
And Patrick.
Right.
So clearly, and we saw him today in the back and he noticed him. So I'm wondering if we do go with that whole, like, whatever the house summons upon.
Right.
Do you think that they're all in on the guy in the black suit?
I think maybe now. I think now that they, if they are manifestations of the house, as we've sort of hypothesized, and that's our working theory at the moment, I think that now, that as agents of the house, they have a fuller understanding of the house.
Okay.
And I think that now they know who the man in latex is. And I think that we saw that on Chad's face when he recognized the man in the house. But I don't believe necessarily that Chad has the same agenda as the man in the rubber latex. I think that the house sends people to do different things because that look on Chad's face was sort of one of shock and fear. One, because it was obviously what killed him.
Right.
So naturally, but I don't think that Chad was sent to do what the rubber man has been sent to do.
No, absolutely.
If that makes sense. So I think that he was sort of taken aback, like, oh crap, this is going to happen again.
Well, and I might be getting ahead of myself, and I'll bring it up when we talk about it, but I just want this thought in your head. Do you think that ghosts and just knowledge of ghosts and things like and spirits, tying that into the house, they relive the same exact moment in time that they died?
I think that they are kind of stuck in a stasis because we saw Chad and Patrick as ghosts still in that same argument and that same sort of unhappiness. So I do think that as they're trapped in whatever sort of situation they were in as they died. And I think that perhaps what pushes them to want to get away from the house and to be able to leave is the hope that they can escape this situation they've been trapped in. I think we see that with Moira as well. I don't think that Moira wants to be sort of the slutty maid that takes advantage of husbands anymore, but she's stuck in that because that's how she died.
Right.
So I think that, I think that they're stuck and they're in some sort of stasis where within the confines of the house, the situations that they were in as they died are the situations that they are stuck in. It's sort of like a purgatory.
And they have to love the house because Chad, you know, and Patrick, as far as we knew, they didn't really love the house. They wanted out of it. Right. So my question is like going into the house, they wanted to love it because they wanted to grow family. They wanted to grow together.
Right.
But then they grew this hatred for it.
And then the house turned on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's an interesting little addition to our theory, which I want to get into more in predictions, but I'm with you on that. I do sort of see that perhaps when a tenant turns on the house, that's when the house turns on the tenant sort of thing. So we see Patrick and Chad, you know, little things. Patrick hits on Ben in a situation where he tries to throw himself on Ben, which I thought was kind of funny. And kind of sad also, like he was just kind of stuck in this sort of, he didn't want to really be doing that, but he was stuck there. I didn't think that Patrick really wanted it, but it was like, that's his role as a ghost because that's who he was when he died.
And I was kind of nervous because I felt like he was almost going to go for it. And
Ben
was going to let him do it.
Yeah. I think that there was a moment where Ben almost was going to.
Yeah.
I think there was that flash and he was like, no, which I think is interesting that, you know, we've seen Ben as obviously an adulterer. And he's cheated on his wife, but I think that that speaks to maybe even larger issues. If it's not even women, it's just sort of anything that he can be influenced and seduced by. So I thought that was very interesting this week, to see him almost fall into that trap. But also it begs the question, is it really that, or is it that he's just able to be seduced by the house? Because these are agents of the house, and the house can just seduce him no matter what.
Part of me feels as if the house almost shows you who you really are.
Right.
And so, true. You know, because with Vivian, it kind of has stayed away from her. You know, it affects her minimally, I would say, out of everybody.
Right.
I guess actually Violet, probably the least, but Violet has a love for the house.
Yes.
So as far as Ben, like, yes, he's committed a sin or committed, you know, this act of cheating. So I think in what you're saying, like the house seducing and kind of now anytime he's seduced, out of everybody, he's affected by it the most and he keeps blacking out and going
right
into this euphoric state. I guess I'll say the euphoric state where he doesn't realize it and he wants to go for it, but reality keeps putting him back in check.
Right. Yeah, I would agree that Ben probably has been the most effective thus far. Speaking of Violet, since you brought her up, let's jump into that. So this week, I mean, there wasn't much with Violet, but we did see some moments with Tate, and I guess it spoke larger to Tate's story this week. Tate interacting both with Violet and with Ben. Ben trying to explain to Tate how, you know, he can't see him anymore, asking him why he didn't show up to the therapist that he was referred to, why he never even called. Explaining to Tate that he can't see him at the house if he's going to continue to see him as a therapist, that it needs to be on somewhere else. We also see Violet sort of bringing up the same things. She wants to see Tate somewhere else as well, that she wants to go on a date with him. She doesn't want to be stuck in he always wants her in the creepy basement. And we see Tate sort of struggling in how to get around this, which I think confirmed all of our suspicions that Tate is in fact a ghost himself. It sort of seemed like this was the confirmation that Tate can't leave the house either. Obviously he couldn't go see the doctor. That's why he didn't go. He can't go anywhere else with Violet. No one else. He can't leave the property, and he's trying to figure out how he can get around it. And we come to learn through Addison and Constance this week that Halloween is the one day when ghosts can roam free. So it's the one day that they sort of get this sort of free-for-all, and their tether to the house is released for one day. And so Tate sees that as an opportunity to continue his charade, and he's able to see Ben somewhere else so that Ben can stop being so suspicious of Tate. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, are you with me that we're obviously, we're now certain that Tate's a ghost? Do you feel the same way as I do?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I'm wondering where we're going to go with this. I think of everybody now at this point, I'm more interested in Tate's backstory and what happened to him. Because we've kind of got everyone else figured out, for the most part, why they're stuck there. And when we know why Moira's stuck there, we know why Constance, for the most part, is stuck there. We obviously know why Chad and Patrick are there, but we don't know why Tate is there and why he has so much power with the house, why he's able to control the house in the way that we've seen him control it in the past.
So what were your thoughts when you saw Tate in the black suit?
That threw me for a loop, because I think that we talked about David had predicted that Tate was going to be the person who had sex with Vivian in the suit, and I didn't really think that that was where it was going to go.
Could it be another suit? Or, I mean, that's just kind of like...
Yeah, so I'm wondering, I mean, there's the ones, on the one hand, I know the sorts of tricks that writers play, and I know that that could have been a trick to make us now think that it was Chad and then, or excuse me, Tate, and have it not be. Or is it a clue that it is Tate? So I'm confused. I am not, I guess, naive enough as a TV viewer to think that they just spelled it out for us.
Right.
So I definitely think we were led to believe that, but whether that's actually the truth or not, I'm not certain on this week.
Yeah,
I'm still up in the air on that.
No idea.
Yeah.
And then part of me wonders with the black suit, if it's a... almost a metaphor as far as, like, you're being covered. So is this the suit of the house? Because, you know, they also spoke about the doctor who owned the house. Was this something that... one of his secrets, where, you know, when he wanted to be hidden from doing these bad things... he put this suit on because it masked him. So I wonder if it's something along that lines. Or
interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's interesting. Speaking of the doctor, I want to jump into that. Tate spelled out a little more of the doctor's backstory for us this week when he was in the basement with Violet and wanted to scare her. She's never scared, and he wanted to scare her, so he decides to tell her the continued story of Dr. Montgomery and Nora, and tells her, you know, kind of confirms how they had running secret abortions in the basement, and the girls were supposed to keep it a secret. They weren't supposed to tell anybody, but one girl told her boyfriend, and her boyfriend didn't like it, and essentially kidnapped their baby and killed it. The police show up, really gory, morbid, with it in pieces,
yeah,
in an evidence box, which I find hard to believe that even in the 20s that police would,
like, show up,
return your child like that. Oh, here's the pieces. Have a good night. Very weird. And we have to wonder if that's an embellishment on Tate's part or if that's the truth, because obviously we're learning this secondhand. But then we know from that that's where Dr. Montgomery's Frankenstein complex really turned as dark as possible, because in his drug-addled, grief-stricken mind, he decides he's going to resurrect his child. And this is what leads to, I guess, the bloody finale that the tour guide last week spoke about on the Murder House tour. I'm assuming that this event is what caused him and Nora to either kill each other or one kill a murder-suicide. I'm imagining that's where that's going to go, because Nora probably couldn't take it.
Right.
And Tate says that you know, essentially Dr. Montgomery was successful, and whatever this thing was that he created is still in the basement, and it's that sort of creepy infantata thing that we've seen from week to week that's living in the basement, that's played with Addie, that killed those twins in week one. So this thing is there. It's a presence that's living. And Violet doesn't believe him. Violet completely, I mean, as most sane people would choose to not believe a story like that, she doesn't believe him. But we see that Tate is telling the truth. He wanted her to believe him. And I believe he's telling the truth. That is the story. And that's the God's honest truth. So we were given a confirmation that this sort of creepy infantata is living there. I mean, what do you... I guess my question is, what do you think is going to come out of this? I mean, do we think that the infantata can even come out of the basement? Is ever going to come out of the basement? Is it something that's sort of stuck there? Is it part of the power of the house, or is it living? Like, what are your thoughts?
I don't know, because I kind of go two different ways with it. Is that what is in the black bodysuit?
Oh.
Did he really bring something to life and hid it in a suit? So, you know what I mean? It would feel somewhat normal.
Yeah.
If we're going to go that, like, extreme with it.
Uh-huh.
Also, two, if that's the case, then I think he's tied to the house. But two, I would think it would be more interesting to keep it in the basement, because it never was resurrected. And the power of the house, because that's kind of where it all started. And I wonder if it wasn't all of the same child's
parts. And if he, you know, when he was performing those abortions, was keeping parts and using those parts, which is so disgusting. Like, a thought that I don't ever want to think about again. very valid. I mean, on the idea of it being in the suit, I don't know, just because in the 70s we saw it not in the suit.
That's true.
So I don't know if I'm with you on that one. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was, but I don't know if that's where I'm going with it. But I do think that it would be more interesting if it was a being that was trapped. And that, I guess it also begs the question for us now at this point, to know that, you know, the Montgomerys, and especially Dr. Montgomery's creepy Frankenstein projects, are really what begat the horror of this house. That is the impetus for all of this. So do we think that the being that's living in the basement is the power of the house? Because obviously out of that is what is making everything recur and recur, because they built the house. It wasn't there before that. This is the situation, the reason that the house is what it is.
And you know, the only reason I would go with that is because every person who was involved was a direct link and affected by it. And they keep going back to that story. I just don't know how they're going to tie in the death of an infant or this child's life.
Unless,
you know, and it's interesting that everything has to do with children.
Exactly. Yeah. I was just going to bring that up. I mean, you know, we obviously have Vivian and Ben, and we heard Chad and Patrick bring up they wanted to have a child. They specifically mentioned that. Constance, who lived in the house at one point, has issues with children. We've heard her speak numerous times about children. So there is something about what's so creepy and so morbid about it is that the show has spun really the most innocent thing on earth, you know, and a child, and made it sort of the central evil of this house. Everything sort of revolves around that sort of, that one thing, this children. So that's interesting. And it's definitely, I think it's what plays on our fears, because it's to turn something so innocent into something so evil scares us the most, I think.
Yep.
And so I definitely think that is a big part of the entire back of this show. The point of this show is really on children, as a part of families, which is so creepy and so sad. So speaking of children, let's jump into Vivian and Ben this week. Vivian has, through an argument with Ben regarding Hayden, you know, she's heard from Chad to look into phone records. She's obviously was given that information by the house to sort of further this rift between them. I think that's what Chad was sent specifically to do. to give Vivian the answer to look at phone records to cause a further argument regarding Hayden. And Vivian does this and sees that, you know, he's been in...
Well, question, do you think Chad would have done that if Patrick hadn't gone upstairs and kind of flirted with Ben? Because if you notice when he came back down, he said, oh, you're... When he went upstairs, that's when he made the first comment, something dark or bad around him.
And says there's a darkness, and then Vivian actually repeats that later in the episode.
And as soon as Patrick was showing interest in Ben, that's when Chad kind of was like, he got mad, and then he like looked at her and was like, I love your hair. Like, gave her a compliment so she would really directly like be drawn to him.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's their like, you know, ploy as Ghost. Mm-hmm. He distracts the husband while, you know, Chad gets into the mind of the wife.
Right.
I just thought that that was...
I think that's exactly what that was. I will put money on it that as the story continues, that's exactly what it was.
Well, I think we have our dear friend David Skiffolitti on the line.
Oh, do we?
We do.
David.
Hi, hello.
Hello. How are you?
How's it going, y'all?
It's going great. We're just getting into Vivian and Ben's storyline this week, talking about how Chad and Patrick, the gay ghosts of the house, were sort of sent to further the rift between Vivian and Ben by giving Vivian the idea to look at phone records to see that he was in contact with Hayden. That's where we are at this point. So what were your thoughts this week about Chad and Patrick and Vivian and Ben?
Well, for me, you know, it was very interesting to see that Vivian and Ben were coming apart as Chad and Patrick, the previous owners who fought a lot and had marital problems. It was, you know, they mirrored each other.
Exactly. Yeah, Jesse and I talked about that in the beginning, that it was sort of a direct reflection of each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the same thing that whether he knew it or not about checking the phone records and telling Vivian to be like, hey, the best way to catch a cheater is to check their phone records, was just, I mean, it was too similar.
Right.
Whether or not the character knew it, which I have a feeling if they are a part of the house, I'm sure they do know what's going on.
And that's what Jesse and I were debating that a little earlier, and I'll ask your opinion. You know, we sort of have come to the conclusion as of this week that all of these ghosts that we've seen really are agents of the house, and they're sort of maybe summoned when their history appropriately mirrors what is needed to further the house's agenda. Are you sort of on that page with us that that's what's going on here with Chad and Patrick, that the house brought them into sort of a visibility because that's what the house needed to further what it wants to do, which is tear Vivian and Ben apart?
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily the house's agenda to tear them apart, much so as it is to sort of get even.
Okay.
I have a feeling that the house has an underlying agenda that whatever's haunting it or whomever's haunting it is trying to rectify a wrong.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of where I'm at this point with the house. Because it seems like a lot of couples have lived there, a lot of families have lived there. There was that Christian nurses
right.
or whatever they were living there.
That's true. Forgot about them for a second. So another question for you, Jesse and I were talking about this earlier, and I'd like to know your opinion. We sort of, excluding the Christian nurses for the moment, every other past and current tenant has been a couple who have had issues revolving children. In Chad and Patrick's introduction, they specifically say how they'd wanted to have a child, but their sort of infidelities and whatever have driven them apart. We've seen issues with Vivian and Ben, clearly. Constance, who lived there, obviously had issues with children as well. And this all sort of stems from the original child issue of Dr. Montgomery and his abortions and his Frankenstein baby.
So, oh my God, that's right.
So we Jesse and I are sort of on the page that this is a really a central theme that the show has revealed itself, that it's sort of turned this innocence of a child into the greatest evil that sort of is the reason for the evil in the house. Is the page is where we're coming from. Do you see anything in that? Do you agree, disagree? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, also, if you think about it like that, like having the innocence be of a child or be the central theme, like getting ripped away, also that does completely correlate with the Christian nurses, because the girl that man raped and then murdered was a virgin. She was
right.
Very innocent and she was young. And that would make a lot of sense.
Right.
With the original owners having an illegal abortion clinic in the basement and then having their own child completely horribly murdered and Frankenstein up.
Right. Yeah, so I definitely think that is something. Yeah, I guess I'm glad that we're all on the same page then. We all sort of agree, and I do think we're going to see that is a big part, and it's going to continue to be shown in what we saw this week with Vivian and Ben. Once they do go to the hospital, Vivian thinks she's having her miscarriage, and the doctor says, are you positive about your timeline that it's only 8 weeks? Because the baby is much larger than it should be, and then the doctor is looking closely at the monitor and faints.
Right.
So now we're wondering just what is growing inside of Vivian.
Well, if the doctor's having questions about how old the baby growing inside of her is, and Vivian is having all these issues with the pregnancy, clearly the child is supernatural.
Right.
I mean, we already know that it is, like, without a doubt, not Ben's kid.
Yes. So
used to have theory about who the man in the rubber suit is.
Okay, we were talking about that too, because this week we did see Tate in the rubber suit at one point.
Right.
So the show is obviously trying to throw us into that direction. So what's your theory as of now?
As of right now, my theory that the man in the rubber suit is the doctor, the original owner of the house.
Ah. Okay.
And whatever happened, because we still don't know what the horrible ending was
right.
to their existence, because we don't know why his wife has a huge gash in her head and how the doctor eventually died.
Right.
And my whole theory is, after they had their mishap with the child, with their own baby being cut up into pieces and then him trying to put it back together with animal parts, he is trying to please his wife again.
Okay.
And create another child for it. As far-fetched as that may seem.
Well, it does. But I do think that last week, with Nora and that very final scene where she is sort of reaching out to the child in Vivian's stomach, I think that could be proof to your theory then that he's trying to give her a new baby.
Right, and he's trying to right the wrong from the past.
Right. Okay. I can definitely get behind that. Yeah.
I know it seems a little nuts.
Well, we're talking about American Horror Story here, so when we're talking about nuts, it's all nuts. So
it is.
I wouldn't put anything past them.
Now, my question for you is,
yes.
Do you think that now that Vivian and Ben have met the previous owners, the owners that were right before them,
uh-huh.
do you think that Vivian is going to find a confidant in one of them?
I do. I could see her having a confidant in Chad, yes.
Right. I only ask that because so far, anyone else that's ever lived in that house, whether it be Moira or Constance or Tate, everyone seems a little uneasy around them.
Right.
Like they don't trust them, and they know something's not really right, and Larry is there always being a weirdo. So strange. And with the two gay owners, whom they needed, like, someone to help zhuzh them up, and then they sort of, like, recreate their previous Halloween there, I just felt that she was maybe finding a friend in one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that that was sort of ripped apart towards the end once Chad had his freak out and told them that they weren't, it's not their house, they know it, and the house knows it, and they weren't even worthy of it. I do wonder how that will be repaired, but we see in the previews for next week that Chad is going to be back, and we know that. We know that Zachary Quinto wasn't here for just one episode, so I wonder how that will be resolved, because it, as the episode ends, she throws them out of the house. But I do see him becoming a friend for her because of how similar their stories are, their situations are.
Exactly.
I just wonder how they'll be brought back together.
That I'm not sure of.
Yeah.
But I do feel like he's around for a little while longer, at least.
Yeah. And I hope so, because he was great this week. Zachary Quinto was great. The character was added a little bit of fun, I think. The show is obviously really great and fun in one aspect, in that it's so scary and it's so suspenseful. But I think that he was a little lighter in tone. He was a little, there was some light comedy with him, obviously as much as American Horror Story will allow. But I do think that he sort of allowed a brightness that has sort of maybe been missing from the show thus far. Not that it necessarily needs it, but I enjoyed his presence. And
doesn't he get a friend?
We did read that last week, that he does have that lesbian friend, so that'll be interesting as well, to see when she comes into play and how she comes into play.
That's right, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's how they're going to be bringing him back.
Maybe. Well, before we go... Before we go to commercial, I want to talk about the one last really big aspect of this episode, which was Constance and Addison. Really tragic this week. You know, we see Addie, we really sort of, saw Addie in I guess a different light. For the past couple of weeks, she's just been kind of this weird, obviously she's disabled, mentally handicapped, whichever the correct term is for her. And she's been, in the other character's eyes, sort of off-putting because she's always in the house. She always finds a way in. This week, she was sort of given... There was sort of a humanization of her because, you know, she just wants to be pretty. For Halloween, she wants to be pretty, and you sort of felt for her. And Constance is fighting her on that because, as we see in the beginning, when Addie is, I guess, flirting with Constance's boy toy... Constance alludes to previous times where Addison has also had trysts with Constance's men, which I found very interesting and I want to learn more about. But Constance is fighting her and letting her become a pretty girl. And then she sort of eventually gives in and buys her that very creepy pretty girl mask, which is not pretty in any way, shape, or form, because it's the creepiest thing I've ever seen. But Addie finally feels pretty, and she's so excited, and she wants to run across this, she wants to go trick-or-treating, and she wants to show Violet. Violet won't open the door, and she wants to go trick-or-treat with some girls. She runs into the street, and she's struck by a car. Struck down and dying, and Constance will not let them take her to the hospital. Constance wants to drag her to the house before she actually dies, so that she can at least keep her child as a ghost, was my understanding of what Constance was trying to do there, so that her actual death would take place on the property, and she's unable to do it. It seems that Addie dies in the street before Constance can drag her up there, and Constance is now without her Addie. How did that strike you this week? How did that affect you?
Well, for me, I was a little confused with that whole storyline. I totally feel for Addie, and I understand, like, where she's coming from, and I know that, like, when you do have a disability, like Down syndrome and stuff like that, you just want to fit in.
Right.
I totally understand that stuff. She Wants to Be Pretty for Halloween, which was very sweet and touching. But where I got confused was is that I never thought that Constance and Addie were alive.
Right. We have talked about that.
Only because Constance interacting with the other people that are that have passed on the show.
Right.
And if Constance is alive, which I'm sure she is now, I don't know where I was going with this, but I was just...
So it shook what you had believed before.
I was just confused as to whether or not she was alive or not, and then seeing her be so emotional about her daughter, she calls, like...
The Mongoloid.
Her in the first episode?
The Mongoloid?
The Mongoloid. like, if she does love her daughter, why does she speak to her so horribly? Why does she lock her in a closet with mirrors? Like, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Constance is just a pretty twisted woman.
Well, also, don't you guys feel like she does the thing, and I kind of got that feeling today, you know, that she locks her in the room, that she tells her she's not pretty. Like, what mother says that their daughter's not pretty, no matter what? And then to be so mad that she had makeup on, I feel like she does those things to keep Addie feeling like she'll never be worth anything and she'll never leave her mother.
Right. I can definitely say that she doesn't have her other three children around her. Yes, I definitely feel that. And I also maybe could see that Constance breaks Addie down almost to protect her and prepare her for anyone else in the outside world to do that as well.
Right.
So that it won't be such...
That's what I was thinking.
I could see both of them, but I do think that Constance didn't want her to leave her. So she didn't want her to have any sort of self-esteem. But I think that...
How old is Addie anyway? We still don't know.
Right, and she didn't say this week. We do see Violet ask her, and she says a lady never reveals her age.
Well, so that's the question I was actually thinking of. In the first episode, with the two boys...
Right.
What year was that?
That was
1970.
Okay, because Addie was so little in that scene, so I was trying to, like, do some sort of math in my head. Because...
Addie would be 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, but
makes me go back to that thing, Billy, what I was saying before, of I feel like they're reliving... Like, I feel like her running out in the street, part of me wants to say that might have already happened. And that's how she's able to go from house to house, because she was never tied to a house. She died outside of the house. So I don't know. I have no idea, because I don't know what to think about Constance either. Because now I guess maybe this would mean that she has to keep Addie hidden, because maybe someone didn't know about Addie's death, and now a lot of people do. I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out next week, for sure.
So, Jeff, you're saying that Constance and Addie are sort of reliving and rehashing what happened in the past.
Yeah.
To an extent, because I don't know if I'm fully bought on that fact in the sense of, if Constance is dead and reliving this life, how is she able to go from house to house? How is she able to have sex with this freaking young kid? Who is this young kid? Maybe we'll find out who that is too. But so I don't really know. I don't know if it's just Addie.
I mean, I think that this week, for me at least, led me to the belief that they aren't dead.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And so I think that either it plays on what we've sort of talked about before, where sometimes people with Down syndrome do not age the same way that we would, which I don't know if that is truth or not, so please don't send us hate emails. We're just guessing. But also... or if it's just an inconsistency in the show and they just didn't really think about it, which also could be very possible too, because...
No, I mean, they would catch that, I feel like.
Maybe. But I do think we will, before season ends, I think we'll understand that more. Because I think that there are a lot of people who are wondering about that.
Well, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see if Addy comes back.
Right. Definitely. All right, well, we need to jump to a commercial. Are you going to hang on and come back with us, David, or?
I think I have to go. I think my phone is dying.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in, and we'll talk. Well, you'll be back next week.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. We're going to jump to a commercial. We'll be right back.
Want to find out what the AfterBuzz is about?
Janice is a drama queen.
This is the divide that is going to carry the series.
Give us a call. 424-256-1729. 424-256-1729.
Television, and they want it to be as dramatic as possible.
I mean, it's Shakespearean.
You never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Find out why AfterBuzz TV is the number one source for after-show content.
Now, in the eyes of Jimmy, Nucky is a villain.
424-256-1729.
424-256-1729.
I mean, who would you guys rather hear that from?
Your husband or your best friend?
The wig!
The wig will come out.
When the TV show is over,
the old commercial.
Get your AfterBuzz on.
All right, well, welcome back. This is AfterBuzz for American Horror Story, Season 1, Episode 4, Halloween Part 1. Again, I'm your host, Billy Nellis, here with DJ Jesse in the booth, and we have a ghostly presence in the studio. We were just talking to him on the phone, but he has somehow appeared in studio. David Scafletti
is
here in studio.
I made it.
AfterBuzz
summoned him.
I know, right? We needed you to push our agenda. All right.
I was just making you talk longer so I could make it here.
So, for the month of October, we have been doing something fun with you guys. We have been continuing our American Horror Story movie night. Each week, we've been bringing you a movie suggestion that plays on the theme of this week's theme of the episode. And so this week, we wanted to talk about the 2001 film, The Others. David and I, off camera, have been talking about this show many times, how it's really an influence on sort of the series as a whole, but we've never really found a way to fit it into the episode at hand. But I think this week it really sort of compared when we see Chad and Patrick now come in, and we're finally realizing that this world of the dead and the world of the living are enmeshed, sort of.
Yeah.
And they exist amongst each other rather than separate planes as we sort of believe them to be in reality.
Right. And the same thing with The Others. It does take place in a house.
Right.
And the ghostly world and the living world can only exist in that house.
Right. And where that movie divulges from the show is that they are unaware of each other.
Exactly.
To an extent. So the film was made in 2001, written and directed by Alejandro Amenábar, starring Nicole Kidman. It's a great movie. Like we said, it's
such a good movie.
It's so creepy, so scary, sort of in the vein of American Horror Story, where it's not like stab, like Saw film, but it's just very atmospheric, very tense.
It has a lot of jumpy moments, and it also has a lot of touching moments.
Right.
I think
there's a lot of emotion to it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of character connection rather than just nameless people getting killed.
And the other thing that does differ is that the ghostly world is the center of that film,
right,
as opposed to this, where it's basically the living world.
Right. And there is actually a quote that I found online from the film that that just makes so much sense in comparison or in reflection of this show, where the maid, played by Fionnuala Flanagan, who's a pretty well-respected Irish actress,
mm-hmm,
she says, sometimes the world of the dead gets mixed up with the world of the living, where it's sort of an anomaly in the house, just as it's an anomaly here in the murder house on American Horror Story. So it's a great film. As Halloween's around the corner, check
definitely
it out.
Definitely watch it.
Even if you've watched it, watch it again. It doesn't get old.
It doesn't. But if you did watch it when it first came out and you're watching it for the first time again now, be warned that there is a lot of screaming in that film. Because I watched it again recently and had to cover my ears because I was like, wow, people are screaming a lot. Yeah. And it's like really high pitched.
Also beware, Nicole Kidman's face can move a little more.
It moves a lot. Isn't she a blonde in that movie, I think?
I think so.
I think so.
All right, well, let's jump into news and gossip with Jesse in the booth.
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right, so in an interview with Ryan Murphy, Entertainment Weekly, asked, I think the biggest shock is that Addy is killed off. Why do that? Ryan revealed, well, I think it was very important to Jessica Lange's character, and you'll see coming up, once her beloved child is taken away, she needs another child in her life. And the question is, will that be Vivian's child? And I also love the commentary that the writers came up with, that only in death does Jessica Lange and other characters realize that this girl was beautiful all along. And in fact, a very pretty girl. I love what she... what that says about the world, and I thought it was very powerful.
Huh. That's so sad to think about.
Yeah.
The way that, it's been presented to us.
Right.
That only after she dies do people realize that Addie was a beautiful person.
Right. Yeah. And they couldn't see it before. That is sad. I think Violet saw it this week, though. In that moment, I think Violet actually came to...
Well, I think Violet always... has, but she was just
never really
she was uneasy about it,
right?
Because this girl was just showing up in her house and being so strange with her,
right?
And her daughter.
Well, the next question is Addie definitely gone, or will we see her ghost? Ryan said, no, I think she was dead before she got to the spot.
So to the spot, though, maybe there is a specific spot on the grounds that you have to be placed.
Or either that, or she just was already dead in the street and she wasn't on the grounds yet.
Or that.
Which I could see that.
I could see that too, but don't...
Because people have died in different places. They died in the basement, they died in the bedroom, all sorts of...
But if they... We saw a while back during house invasion, two people got killed in the house.
Mm-hmm.
If... From what we know of the house, will those characters be coming back?
Right.
I think that, yeah, that'll be interesting.
In theory, they should right? Because they died in the house, and...
Well, the two killers who were killed in the house, and, in the present-day ones, Azura Sky and the other guy.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Potentially, the house could use them.
Exactly.
I would assume if what we have theorized of the house is true, then yes, they should be able to.
Right.
And especially because... Ben's mistress came back.
Right.
And she was recently killed. So.
Yeah.
So the next question goes on. Will we find out why people like Moira are stuck living in this limbo? Ryan said, yes, if you die on the property, you die in this house. You are condemned to be there for all eternity. You can't go to the next level of whatever you perceive death and spirituality to be. The house definitely has its own rules, and the evil that is created there is so intense that it does hold the feet of the dead, and they're sort of like slaves to the mythology of it.
Okay.
So, proving the theory that those two killers from Home Invasion should be able to come back eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we going to see Constance's husband again since he died in the house? Ryan said he does come back and is having an unexpected affair with somebody in the house. Even in death, he's a cheating ghost.
What if he's in the room?
I was just gonna say that. Oh my god.
Oh. We'll talk about that more in a second.
I guess we'll know if she has a Downsy baby. I didn't mean to say it like that, but push that thing, Jesse. Push that button.
Yeah. Those of David Skiffelity. And not those TV.
Write him hate mail, not us.
You can write me hate mail.
What can you tease about part two of the Halloween episodes? Ryan said, we find out more about what happened to Tate. Was the high school shooting a fantasy, or was it real?
Oh.
Oh, interesting. Maybe that's how he ended his own life. He did this whole high school shooting and then killed himself in the house.
Yep.
Maybe.
I'm with it.
Maybe.
With it.
All right. Well, that wraps up our news and gossip. So now it's time for...
my favorite part of the night.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV
predictions.
All right. So, a lot of stuff thrown at us this week.
Yeah.
Also, a huge cliffhanger, which we didn't get to talk about in our breakdown. But Violet is missing. Once Ben and Vivian can get home, Violet is gone. We see that Larry's at the door. And we also see that the rubber man is in the house. So, we don't know exactly who has Violet, but she's not there. And we have two suspects who potentially could have her. I think my guess is more with the rubber man. And I'm kind of thinking the rubber man's going to be Tate and was actually going to help her rather than
I don't think she's actually missing. I think she became aware of the rubber man and Larry and is just hiding.
Okay. What do you think about the door being open when they got home? The door was wide open. We had Larry knocking outside wanting the money.
No.
The rubber man inside, and they get home and the door is wide open. Do we think that she maybe thought, okay, this sort of... She could maybe easily or more easily overcome Larry in his sort of crippled state and maybe thought to just run open the door and run out that way and just push him aside because he obviously could be overpowered very easily.
Right. Well, we think he had a shovel last week.
And so my other thing is actually with Violet, do you think that you have to be afraid to see the ghosts? Because...
Well, she sees Tate.
Right.
And she's not afraid of Tate.
And that's what makes me wonder, because I feel like he was trying to scare her on purpose, not just to scare her.
Right.
And then when she kind of was just like, whatever, like she walked away from it. So I wonder if because she's not afraid, she can see certain things, but because she's not afraid, she can't be affected negatively by the house. Because we saw the guy with the rubber suit was standing right behind her and didn't touch her. And then...
Or didn't yet.
Right. And the only time we saw... her really be afraid was when the guy was knocking on the door. And I wonder if the only reason she was really afraid of that was because she had a previous home invasion.
Maybe. Oh, I didn't even think about that. That if, since the house is sort of haunting and attacking its owners, that it lives on fear.
Right. Oh. I don't know.
And the only time she saw the baby...
was when she was scared.
Creepy baby in the basement was when she was frightened, and the baby only appeared when that Kokor was afraid of the basement.
Right. It's an interesting theory, one I hadn't thought of yet.
Good job, Jesse.
Good job, Detective.
Thank you.
Detective DJ Jesse Janetti. okay, so we also see in the last minute that Ghost Hayden is back. We see that she calls Vivian's phone in the episode when Vivian leaves her a message.
How did she do that, though?
Is it that she did it, or is it the house is able to do things?
Right.
I think that's a question. That's more the question. Is the house able to do things like that more than was Hayden able to do
it? Only proves my theory further about Chad and Patrick and the house knowing what's going on in their in Ben and Violet's Vivian's relationship, and that it's only... further harboring the resentment towards each other by throwing Chad and Patrick in and giving her the idea to check his phone.
Right. Definitely. I'm with you on that. I think it is all the house.
It has to be.
Yeah. There's really no other explanation.
Well, yeah.
Okay. So we kind of talked about it earlier, so we're definitely thinking that you're hypothesis as to what is growing in Vivian is Dr. Montgomery's child.
I'm still thinking it's Dr. Montgomery's. It could be Constance's ex-husband or
former husband.
But I do think it's the doctor for some strange reason.
Yeah.
Only because of the way that... Is his wife's name Nora?
Yes.
Nora. Only because of the way she acted when she showed up in the house.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that we should wrap it up here.
I think so.
It was a great week. We'll be back next week for the wrap-up for Halloween Part 2. For everyone here at AfterBuzz TV, all of our producers, DJ and Jesse in the booth, me and David Scafletti, thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
From producers Kevin Undergaro and Phil Svitek, engineer DJ Jesse Janity, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. If you have questions or comments, be sure to buzz us at info@AfterBuzzTV.com. And you can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter by searching for AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
AfterBuzz. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.